And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Friday Eve, March 6th. Temperatures outside in the low 30s, which is pretty close to where we should be for this time of the year. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, how is your day turning out? Welcome back home, by the way. You made it safely.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I did see a number of attendees that I was with down in Denver. They're still trying to get back. They had a lot of flights canceled going into the I-States and so forth. So there's a number of folks still hanging out in the Denver airport. I'm hoping they've even gotten a little further than that by now, but we'll see how it goes. Things are going to warm up. I've had a lot of discussions with folks that calving, lambing, and so forth has started to take off. Tis the season for new babies hitting the ground all over the place. So happy to have that happening.
That is. Now, the bad news, I was just going over some research and reading a couple of articles today. We've got something coming up that is going to disrupt the weather across much of the lower 48, and that's a split in the polar vortex. I'll be putting an article online about this either later this afternoon or tomorrow. But what that does is basically all of the Arctic air that's been held up into around the North Pole is about ready to get dislodged as the stratosphere is warming up, and typically that it splits the polar vortex, I guess to make it simple. Stormier and colder weather are expected from mid-March now through mid-April. So not great news for calving season, unfortunately.
Okay, so mid-March. You want to pin that down a little bit further?
March 15th. March 15th okay. Through probably April 15th through the 20th, it looks like.
So we have a solid 30 days of less than desirable weather.
Yes.
So soak it up while we can.
Yeah. Now we'll see. That doesn't mean that's going to be a solid stretch of cold, but it does mean, you know, stormier than normal weather. And, you know, for this time of the year, we'll get quite a few pushes of some modified Arctic air. I don't think it'll be as cold as the stuff that we had in February, but it'll be a modified Arctic air. So just when you think spring is here, the Mother Nature sometimes has other ideas. And this is coming in conjunction with the stormy part of the LRC cycle as well, which is forecasted to start right around the 15th of this month through early April, which now may be extended with this split in the polar vortex. This may be extended now into the middle of April. So short term, we're looking at, some halfway decent weather with sunshine. Temperatures today topping out in the 30s, which normal high this time of the year is right around 30, so a little bit above average. Tonight under clear skies, we'll bottom out near 15. And for Friday, looking okay. West-southwest winds 10 to 15. Highs close to 40. Then we're well into the 40s on Saturday and probably in the low 50s on Sunday, and pushing the mid to upper 50s on Monday. Now, that's not going to last long because we do cool down into the 30s. And like we've been saying with over the last month, once we hit mid-March, that's when we start to go into the stormy part of the LRC cycle. And now our mid-range, our medium-range models, which go out about 10 days, they're starting to pick up, and all of them, on a St. Paddy's Day weekend snow event in the Northern Plains. Now, there's going to be quite a bit of moisture with this. That's the good news. And the question is, where does that rain snow line, where is that going to sit? And it looks like it's going to be pretty close to the Red River Valley. So the exact track of that storm is still a little in question. But if you have plans for St. Paddy's Day weekend, it looks like a very good chance of a major storm in the Northern and Central Plains. Lovely.
Well, when you said something earlier about, well, you know, we just when you thought spring was here, no. Anybody who's lived in the Northern Plains for a long time realizes this was not spring, and
right,
it wasn't here yet.
Yep.
So none of us are surprised. This happens. You get a little bit of a teaser all the time, particularly at the tail end of February. Now we're here into early March. And what are we going to do? Who are we going to call and complain about it? Pretty much not anybody.
You can call your neighbor, but there's nothing they can do.
Yeah, nothing's going to change there. Mm-mm. So it'll be fine. We'll get through that. The thing to keep in mind is, don't, if you're on the highway a lot, which many of us are, don't go pull those coveralls and snow shovels and whatnot out of your vehicles just yet.
No.
I have a friend down at Barnesville who told me a couple years ago it was my fault that we had a late season storm because I'm the one who took my coveralls out of the pickup too soon. Don't be that person. Give it a little time.
You jinxed
We're not quite
it,
done yet. Supposedly. I
right?
don't know that Jay was right about that, but nonetheless. Now,
Right.
things that we can be right about, where do all the beef cattle lie? Really, we can look at the rank of states, and North Dakota as well as South Dakota is in the top 10. So the top 10 states account for more than 57% of all the beef animals in the U.S. Who do you think is the biggest state that holds the highest population of beef animals, Dean?
Which state? I'm going to say either. Is this a trick question? My first guess is Nebraska or Iowa. One of those two.
No,
Texas?
Texas. And Texas
Texas.
has
All
more
right.
cattle by double.
Okay. That was
Yeah,
my third. That was
Texas
my
is
number
six.
three.
Nope. Texas is 14.6% of all the beef animals in the U.S. Oklahoma is halfway behind them at a solid 7%. After that, we just kind of roll down the list. As a surprise to many, the third state ranked for beef animals, or at least in the ranking order, is Missouri. That's followed by Nebraska, then South Dakota, Montana, Kansas. North Dakota comes in at a solid 8. We do have more beef animals than we have people in the state of North Dakota. I don't know that that's very surprising, though. So it's nice to know that if anything happens, we certainly have enough beef to feed all of us who are here. Y'all get your own cow, maybe a little bit more.
Right.
So with that ranking, again, you have seven states that have over 1 million head, and that makes a significant impact on our industry. Of those head, they can be on pasture, on feedlot, in a variety of situations, but it's nice to know where all of those critters lie in case you might want to be aware of that. Also know that not everyone is going to go off to slaughter. Some will be. Others will eventually make it there, but we have plenty of breeding cows, et cetera, and those that are providing embryos so that we can continue to increase the herds. I was asked earlier today if that means because we have that number of animals, are we going to increase our herd size? Will that help bring down the price of beef? All right. We have the lowest number of animals in this nation since 1965. So we have a very low number of head, but we've become incredibly efficient at producing beef per animal. So when you look at a beef animal in the last 10 years, we now can produce 40% more beef per animal than what we did just recently. That helps us maintain the amount of supply that we have for the nation. That's one thing that we can do very, very well is continue to provide beef. Additionally, because we already established that new low in the marketplace because we've had a run-up on beef like many other food items. This happens all the time with gasoline and many other inputs. Once you get to that new high and it comes down, it never comes down quite as far as we had it before. So we'll see where this lands eventually, but I don't see it changing very soon.
Gotcha. Well, we've got Ken on line one. Ken, welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. You've got a question for Bridget today.
Hello.
Hi, Ken.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. Say, I guess I got a question for Bridget about animal numbers. I keep hearing that we import more than we export, beef, that is. So I was wondering, is it the price and certain cuts of our beef that we export, or why are we even exporting anything, I guess?
Sure.
That would be what I was interested in. Because
I think without doing.
then the tariffs be different is what I was getting at, I guess, as far as beef
Absolutely.
goes. But
Okay, Ken, let me see if I can
I'll
help,
hang
and
up
I'll try to
with
do this.
you. Okay.
Okay. I'll try to do this as best I can without having anything in front of me, just based off of what I know. All right, so Ken is curious, do we truly import more beef as more than we export, et cetera? Okay, so what are we exporting out of the country? In many cases, it's quality beef. We export some very quality cuts to select markets, such as the UK, where they don't have quite the same situation as we do. Also, there's a what gets counted in that number is the product that we don't want here. oftentimes in the U.S., we don't want what's called the offal, the tongue, the intestines, oxtail, etc. Those are cuts that are not heavily utilized here in the U.S., and those often get shipped off to other countries where they do want them and like them. Even as much as beef tongue really goes down to Mexico a lot, they like it, very much so. Some of us are getting better with our smokers and able to use it up here. So how does this start to impact us as far as tariffs, et cetera? We have a number of feedlots in Canada that supply beef to the U.S. And here's how we do it. We'll raise them. They'll come off the pasture. They'll go up to a feedlot to be finished and then come back down into the States for processing. What are the tariffs going to look like on that beef? Well, I think right now they're pretty arbitrarily across the board being tariffed. I can't tell you exactly what that impact looks like, but I can tell you that even on the crop input side, when we talk about fertilizer and so forth, there's a lot of discussion between, so let's look at a retailer who's saying, am I going to pass this cost on to my farmer? Do I have to split it with my supplier in Canada, or do I cover that cost myself? Take that fertilizer number, replace it with beef, and a lot of those discussions are going on. Hope I hit the mark for Ken. I was trying to get his question answered as best possible, but are tariffs going to impact us? Yes. Do we continue to export some beef? Yes. We have a very strong demand here in the U.S. And so as we send some of the lesser known cuts out of country, we'll probably get some other ones back. Also know that one of the top priorities for USDA right now is to keep a very close eye on imports coming from countries that potentially have disease issues. We've already blocked Mexico because of the New World screw worm. And there's also, I think, some blocks on Paraguay. We also know that there is foot and mouth disease happening in Europe, such as Germany. So we're going to need to keep an eye on those.
I've got a question on something you mentioned, Bridget. So we take the livestock and they're processed up in Canada and then they come back. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, we've got some feedlots just over into Alberta.
Why with the tariffs going on then, why couldn't we do that at the feedlots here? And so we don't have to get a tariff.
Depends if
back.
We have room for them. If feedlots are already currently full, that's a live animal. You can't cram them in. They have to have, there's certain restrictions that go along with water supply, space conditions, feedstuffs. If we don't have room for those head, we can't just shove them into another corner and try to keep feeding them when they've got the room in the supply side for them in Canada. So it comes down to a space concern as well.
If the tariffs,
or turning them into pasture.
Right. If the tariffs continue, would it make sense to build more feedlots in the U.S.? Or is that not financially?
I can't wait to see the size of your checkbook to help us do that. That'd be awesome.
Right. Just trying to help.
That'd be great.
Just trying to help.
I understand. There's a lot of questions here that still need to be answered. You know, the Trump administration has said they're going to step up to try to make sure that there are minimal impacts to farmers in the long term. I don't know what all that looks like yet. I don't think any of us do, but we definitely are paying close attention. So speaking of those animal ideas and questions, the livestock markets are up next. Hang tight as we go through the market update for the day. And when we return, we have guests to talk about Common Ground here in North Dakota. Thanks for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus. It's a day outside that's warming up nicely. So from what I've seen on pictures y'all have been sending me, some of you are working in the shop. Some of you are cleaning out barns, making room for more calving. And some of you are on your way to town, tax appointments, and so much more. So it's a busy day all around the farm. Now, if you folks wanted to join us today to talk about maybe more of a social event than just a hardworking, getting dirty in the shop type of event today. And those two people are Heidi Haugo. She is with the North Dakota Corn Utilization Council, and also Becky Feikema. She's not only a farmer, but now a film video star, you might say. So ladies, thanks for joining us. And I wanted to start out with Heidi. Let's talk just a moment about the Corn Utilization Council in North Dakota and how that ties into Common Ground, another organization here in the state.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us today, Bridget. I've got my Common Ground North Dakota logos on today, but like you mentioned, I actually work for the North Dakota Corn Council. So I'm the communications director there. And the North Dakota Corn Council actually is a sponsor of this program, really. The Common Ground North Dakota is kind of housed within the North Dakota Corn Council, but really the program belongs to volunteer farmers across the state of North Dakota who are interested in bridging the gap between consumers and farmers. As you know, we have a shrinking farming population. Only about 1.5% of Americans are farmers. But 36% of those farmers are actually women, and that is a relatively new figure. And quite a lot of, historically, people making buying decisions as consumers are also women. So they're, you know, maybe buying for their families, their spouses. When they're at the grocery store, they have questions about if genetically modified foods are safe, or do they need to be buying organic foods? So Common Ground North Dakota actually started in about 2013. We have about 90 women farmers across the state of North Dakota who are part of this program, and they do various events and reach out to consumers in various ways through social media. We have a podcast now, and we hope to answer those questions for consumers and to be a very transparent and easily approachable organization of women farmers who are ready to answer questions about modern day farming and to help put trust in the food system so that folks really can trust their farmers and trust their food source.
So as we move to introducing Becky, I want to ask you, Heidi, the whole reason we wanted to have this discussion today is because there's an upcoming Common Ground event that's really covering the entire state. And there's a film that's a part of it. Do you want to give us a little description of what we're going to see if we go to the movie From the Heartland?
Yeah, so this is a new program that Common Ground North Dakota has put together. The women in Minot, Bismarck, Grand Forks, and Fargo are hosting a movie screening of this film, of which Becky is a star. So I'm so excited that she's on today and she can talk more about the film. But it's really an effort to bring consumers, curious consumers, into the theater in a low-stakes environment. We're giving free popcorn, free soda, and we're showing this film that is really making a connection between the impact, I think, that agriculture has on rural communities especially, but really any community, and on our state too. So the film was made in Minnesota, but that transfers really easily to North Dakota. And then we're going to have a farmer panel of women afterwards who are there to answer those questions that folks have about modern day farming. So we're really excited to be bringing this into communities statewide.
And when is this, Heidi? When does this get released?
The film starts already this Sunday. We're going to have a showing in Minot at 7 to 8:30 p.m. March 13th will be in Grand Forks, March 26th at the Fargo Theater here in Fargo, and then April 3rd at Dakota Stage in Bismarck.
Yeah, we're going to review those dates and times quite often because we want to make sure that folks who are watching on our live stream, Facebook, YouTube and Acres TV can mark their calendars. And additionally, for those who are listening in the Fargo-Moorhead area, so that you can be attending as well. As we start talking about the film, I want to introduce one of those farmers in the film, and that's Becky Fikema. Becky, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you farm in Minnesota?
Yes. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity and very excited about what you guys are doing with your organization. It just lines up really well with our farm and our family's mission and our goals with educating the public and being an approachable source for information and just a source that you can trust in the ag industry. So really appreciate what you guys are doing and the opportunity. So my family and I farm in southwest Minnesota, very southwest corner in Rock County near Luverne. And my dad still farms the farm that his dad started. So he's still farming near Chandler, Minnesota. And then my husband and I farm with his brother and his wife and some other family members on the farm that his grandpa started in 1950. So very much a family organization with all of us family members and then about six full-time employees as well. So we grow corn and soybeans, some small grains like triticale, oats, hybrid rye, alfalfa, and we also have a feed yard as well. So we have a lot of cattle on feed. So a really great system as far as the corn and the grain that is grown on our farm is used to feed the cattle, and then the manure is hauled back out onto the fields for nutrients for the crops. And so just a very good system, trying to utilize as many resources as we can, and just really paying attention to things like erosion and water quality, nutrient management, all of those things, and try to really focus on what's sustainable for our farm and our communities and the environment as well. So a lot of things kind of get wrapped up into the film From the Heartland, and just that message of all of those things working together. What does it look like, basically boots on the ground with a typical family farm here in Southwest Minnesota?
Becky, I should never have tried to answer the question about the beef cattle herd, because you have a feedlot or cattle on feed.
Yes,
so
we do.
We're going to get to that. We are going to touch on our bottom of the hour news. And when we return, I look forward to asking more questions of Becky and her role in the film From the Heartland, one that all of us can be going to see here right in the Fargo-Moorhead area coming up very soon at the end of March. That'll be on March 26th. Don't go anywhere. Let's learn more when we return. So glad you're joining us today, and great guests that are on. That would include Heidi Haugo. She is with the North Dakota Corn Utilization Council and Common Ground North Dakota, and Becky Fikema, not only farmer from Laverne, Minnesota, but now new movie star in a movie called From the Heartland, which is a documentary really talking about what happens in farmers' day-to-day life. And Becky, we are getting some listener questions in, which, by the way, anyone can email us, ag@flagfamily.com or weather@flagfamily.com. And you can call us on the JLA phone line, 701-293-9000. Ken took advantage of that earlier. And now one of those other questions that I have for you is, what other farmers were involved in this film, Becky, and were they from other areas of the country?
It mainly featured our family farm and some other members from the community as well. So we had Greg Talsma. He's a friend and also owner of Edgerton Ag. And so we utilize his services for seed and crop scouting and things like that. It also featured Jody DeYoung Hughes. She's a soil scientist from the University of Minnesota Extension. So she was part of our film, just kind of filling in some holes with the soil science and things like that, just to help really with some background and some information kind of on the technical side of things. And then also Holly Sammons, she's the economic development director here in Laverne. And so we just really reached out to her for her perspective on the importance of ag in the community and how everything is really tied together. And the kind of the cause and effect and the benefits of when ag is doing well, what does that look like for Main Street in Laverne? So mainly the footage was on our farm and then various communities near Laverne, I would say. So, yeah, it was a fun project.
And Becky, how did you get chosen? I mean, was this a long list of farmers and you were one of the lucky ones that were chosen? Or how did that all go about?
You know, it was quite by accident, honestly. It wasn't one of those things that was on our to-do list or our bucket list or anything like that. So it really kind of happened by accident just one of those things that evolved over time, I guess. So we have a relationship with Gevo, which is a biofuels company, and they actually have an ethanol plant in Laverne, which we've had a relationship with for a long time. And they wanted to do some footage on a farm for some promotions that they were doing. And so they came out with some of their staff and Matt, who is the producer of the film, and his camera crew, and just did some footage on our farm for the promotions that they wanted to do. And from that, Matt approached us afterward and just asked if he could come and follow our family around for a little while. And he wanted to make a documentary from it. And we asked, well, what are you going to do with it? He says, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be, where it's going to go, but I just feel like there's a story here to tell. And so we discussed it, and we decided that it would be all right to do. And so we just kind of turned him loose and let him follow us around. And so we came at different times of the year over the process of probably 2 or 3 years, came at planting and harvest and different community events, and then kind of filled in some holes with things as the story was developing. And then really, he took it and ran with it. He had hundreds of hours of footage, and really, Matt is an excellent storyteller, and he really put it together beautifully. Just the story of how an event, kind of in 2014, which is a really year of extreme flooding in our area, and kind of made us think about what we could do differently. And so the story kind of talks about what that was like 10 years ago and what we did and what our farm operation looks like today in 2024, kind of follows us along that journey.
Am I asking too much if I ask what did change in that time frame, or are you just going to say, well, y'all got to come to the movie so you know?
Yes. Well, there's a little bit
of that. I'm saying you all got to come.
Because it's much more interesting to see it on film versus just hear me talk about it. So, the main event was that huge rain event. And so we saw massive erosion from our fields, just soil washing down the ditches and the streams and the rivers. And, just kind of take a look at our operation and said, okay, there's got to be something we can do differently to prevent something like this from happening again, because it really was devastating to see all of that. We knew it wasn't good for our fields, wasn't good for trying to grow crops. And so we started looking at different options. And one thing that ended up working out in our operation was a switch to no-till and strip-till. So that was the decision that we went for, kind of a drastic change in our operation, actually, to go from more conventional tillage to that sort of tillage. But it just describes kind of the struggles, the things that we had to do differently, the things we had to overcome, and what that looked like really to make a big change like that for our family and for our operation. So. I won't spoil anything more than that, other than just to give you that little teaser about the main topic of change. Another theme that you can see really in the film is kind of this generational story of a family farm. So Sean's uncle and his dad came back and after they did some military service, and they made some changes on the farm. And then when Sean and Mike finished college and came back and kind of took over ownership of the farm, some other things changed. And so we still have Uncle Bob is working on the farm pretty much full time. He's a great resource for us with the wisdom and experience that he brings. And then the next generation. And so we are looking for kind of that, what does the next generation look like? What can we do on our farm today that makes a difference for the next generation, makes it an even stronger business, an even better presence in the community, and even better stewards of the earth and the business that God has given us to run and to prosper. So those are the other themes that running into that film is that generational passing it on. What does that look like as a multi-generational family farm?
Boy, I really love your points about tying into the community. Oftentimes we forget that a farm just isn't an island unto itself, that the influence that you have in the area as a community is tremendous. And did folks around you know that you were going to be a subject of this film? And did they want to be extras? Did they have any curiosities about what was going on with your small size film crew?
Yeah, we did try to fly under the radar just so that we could capture those authentic moments, in the community, like at our kids' ball games and the different, like the fair and the parades on Main Street. And so they did try to just stay in the background and not really cause too much of a, awareness of what they were doing. People did kind of notice after a while, they kind of asked questions, and our girls as friends did really want to be part of it. And they, were excited that they were little in the background. They were part of the film. So yeah, we had some people that really wanted to be in it. And then there was other people that really did not want to be a part of it. So we tried to respond and just steered the camera crew in the other direction. So like both ends of the spectrum, I guess you would say.
I think the opportunity for this film to come out for folks to take part in it is incredible, because you get to see a genuine story about a local family. I mean, Laverne, Minnesota is pretty much local to the Fargo-Moorhead area. And Heidi, as someone from representing Common Ground, what can you say to encourage folks to attend? And let's make sure that we start running through dates, times, locations, and all the good things that someone should know for this.
Yeah, I guess I would say, first of all, if you're hearing this, you're welcome. Please come. Everyone is invited. We really want to have a huge crowd there. We want curious consumers there. I mean, I think, right, we shared that stat about only 1.3 or 1.5% of the working population is farmers, but guess what? Everybody eats. And I think we all have questions about our food. What's so beautiful about North Dakota is the diversity in agriculture and in Common Ground. We have that same diversity reflected. So our farmer panelists are going to be folks who are livestock farmers, grain farmers. We have volunteers who are conventional farmers, organic farmers. We have other folks who are doing strip-till or no-till like Becky's family, but others who are conventional tilling because that's what works for their land. But I think that there's obviously that common thread in North Dakota, Common Ground North Dakota, that all of these farmers really care about their land. I love what Becky said about the next generation and always thinking about how to take care of the land that God gave them and how to make sure that they prosper and that there's something there for the next generation. And we love to share that with consumers. So please, everyone is welcome. Like you said, the dates we have, again, the showing in Minot is this Sunday on March 9th at the Oak Park Theater. They got that graphic up there for you guys. Grand Forks is March 13th. That's at the Empire Theater. The Fargo showing is March 26th at the Downtown Fargo Theater. And the Bismarck showing is April 3rd at the Dakota Stage. You can find more information about all of these and also sign up to get a free ticket. Again, everything is totally free. Free popcorn will be provided at Common Ground North Dakota. It's spelled out just like that, .com. Or at Common Ground North Dakota on Facebook. And I'd be remiss too if I didn't mention our sponsors. So Common Ground North Dakota also has a lot of really enthusiastic supporters, and we have additional sponsorships for these events from the North Dakota Soybean Council, Northern Pulse, the Northern Canola Growers, and also North Harvest Bean Council. So there will just be a ton of representation from all commodities and farmers from all across the state. So we would love to answer your questions, and we would love to talk about farming with you.
And I've got a question for either one of you, Heidi, Becky, whoever wants to answer it. What would be, is this more of an what do you want people to get out of this? More of an educational side, entertainment side, or what would be the main thing you want people to walk away after seeing this and say, ah, this is what I got from this, from watching this?
I think it's a little of both.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you, Becky. We want them to be entertained by the film. But this film has tons of accolades. So she was talking about how the videographer and the filmmaker was very talented, and it's got like something like 18 small film festival awards and submission accolades on it. So I think the film is very good. It's going to be entertaining for folks. And then also, I really do hope that you have questions that we can answer and you do get that educational piece, and that you go home just with a little bit more trust in your food system, feeling like you know a farmer. I hope that you connect with a farmer at this event, and next time you have a question about something at the grocery store or beef, or a question like Ken had earlier about why we're exporting beef, now you know a farmer and you can call them up, and we would be happy to answer those questions in the future too.
That's a great point. And so feel free to join in there, Becky, and make your comments as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say the film is so well done. The videography is beautiful. The story is just really from the heart, I guess. He really captures that essence, that this is a story that we're really, really, truly want out there for people to understand more about agriculture, where their food comes from, what a family farm looks like, some of the struggles. Sometimes it'll be educational as far as what worked for our family, but more importantly, it's maybe just a challenge for everyone to think about their resources and what they can do in their lives to maybe be where is that sustainability piece? Where are is that creation care? And what does that look like for you? There's many ways of doing it. There's many ways of farming. And a lot of times we have the same goal. We might not have exactly the same methods, but the common piece, the common ground, so to speak, is that we're all trying to do the best we can with the resources that we've been given. And so just having that out there as something that is honest and reflects what we're doing, hopefully just opens the door for people to ask questions, to be curious, to find out more, and just to really to have their eyes open a little bit to what it looks like and some of the opportunities that we've been given.
I think the farmer panel at the end will be awesome because people can ask real live questions. I'm looking forward to moderating the Fargo panel after that show at the end. One last question, Heidi, will this movie be featured on YouTube or any other streaming platform? We have an interested listener who's out of state and wants to know if after it's shown in North Dakota, if he could find it somewhere.
Yes. And that's maybe a really great question for Becky too, but the film is available. I don't want to tell our listeners to go watch it because obviously I want you to come to the theater, but it is available on the From the Heartland website. And Becky, is it still available too on Delta? I thought that was a really cool feature that you had a connection with Delta through Gevo and it was an in-flight offering.
Yeah, it's no longer on Delta flights right now. It was from about the 1st of June through the end of the year. So it was featured as a documentary on their in-flight entertainment, which was really cool. We had, I think, over 60,000 people that viewed it during that time on Delta Airlines. So it's no longer available on Delta Airlines, but it is available publicly, and we could probably release the where you can find it after the event, but there is more information about it on our website, FICAMAFARMS.com.
Yeah, so awesome. First and foremost, ladies, come to our showings, and then we'll share it after as well.
Yeah.
That is an awesome idea. All right, thank you, ladies. We so much appreciate all of your time. To Becky and Heidi, enjoy the rest of the afternoon. To everyone else, stay tuned. We want to recap the weather, and I have a listener question to answer over the air. Alrighty, folks. Thank you to everyone who takes advantage of our emails, ag@flagfamily or weather@flagfamily.com. Sends questions to Dean and I. We see your comments in our live streams for Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV, and we want to respond to those as timely as we can. And you're always welcome to call us on the JLA insurance hotline at 701-293-9000. I have a question here that came in via email from Bob, and this regards our earlier discussion about tariffs with Canada. He said, I've read that we import 80% of our potash, which is a fertilizer form, from Canada. And so, Bob, you are correct. We do import quite a lot of our potash. He's asked, how would tariffs impact the import of potash for farmers and eventually for consumers? Okay, so the short-term answer is this. We had a lot of farmers who booked fertilizer back during the prepay season in December. Hopefully they've already taken delivery of that product, and so that product would not be subjected to tariff and will still be going on the field for the 2025 crop. Not everybody has pre-purchased their fertilizer, though. So what can happen now is that fertilizer that has not yet shipped will be subjected to the tariff. Here's where the question lies, and I've listened to several of our farm retailers ask this scenario through their customers, etc. As the retailer who's supplying the product, do I pass on the entire tariff consequence to my farmer? Do I split it with my farmer? Do I split it with my Canadian supplier if they will actually let me do that? Or do I, as the supplier, have to eat that cost entirely myself? That question is going to probably be answered by each and every individual as time goes on. What does that mean to you as the consumer? Longer term out, as we push through the 2025 crop, I will not be surprised to see increases in food inflation due to tariffs. We're going to see what happens with the Trump administration. He says he's going to make things a little easier on farmers. Let's see what that looks like, if that's in the form of federal payments, or if there's something that changes between the U.S. and Canada that impacts the tariffs differently. So everything just started this week. We're going to watch and find out. Those are some of the best case and worst case scenarios I can lay out for you. Hopefully that answers Bob's question accurately.
Interesting. All right. Well, how about we recap the weather real quick? And I do believe
Absolutely.
We have time. Addison, we've got, yeah, we got 10 seconds. Okay. Well, okay, we've got sunny skies, 30s today, around 40 tomorrow. And as we head into the weekend, we're looking at temperatures in the 40s on Saturday, right around 50 or so on Sunday. So finally, some nice weather heading in this weekend. Well, for Bridget and myself, I want to thank you for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.